As one decade gives way to the next, those impossible to ignore lines appear seemingly out of nowhere. And even though we recognize they're no more avoidable than death or taxes, these lines often elicit a mix of disbelief and anger, especially when cracking and packing are on full display. Hi, I'm John Schwannis, and although it might sound as if I'm introducing one of those late-night infomercials for Botox injections and collagen fillers, this is indeed Indiana lawmakers. The lines I'm talking about aren't wrinkles. They're the congressional and legislative district boundaries that are redrawn every 10 years based on data gleaned from the U.S. Census. Now, over the years, in Indiana and elsewhere, these lines have been drawn to diminish the electoral clout of racial minorities and or keep a dominant political party in power. On this week's show, we'll examine the long-running debate over how Hoosiers district maps take shape. Don't go away, Indiana lawmakers, from the State House to your house. And joining me to talk about Indiana's redistricting process are Senator Tim Landon, a Democrat from Anderson, Julia Vaughn, Policy Director of Common Cause Indiana, and Jay Yeager, an Indianapolis attorney who's been at the forefront of several recent legal battles over gerrymandering. And gerrymandering, we all think we know what it is, and it has a lot of baggage attached to it. But I guess technically, and we're going to have a lot of definitions, I'm guessing, in this discussion, by definition, it's simply drawing political maps in a way that gives one party or group an advantage, a distinct advantage, whether fair or not. So all redistricting is not gerrymandering. All gerrymandering is redistricting. Is that fair that we can start at that point? Having said that, Senator, you must think that your district, District 25, is beautifully drawn, and maybe you would say the same for your 10 Democratic Senate colleagues. What's wrong, if there is anything wrong, with Indiana's current system?
Well, I think, in terms of my district, you could say that when it's looked at in terms of the gerrymandering perspective, it's drawn very well, because in my opinion, there was an attempt to pack, if you will, as many Democrats into one district as possible, and then to surround it with another district which is dominated by Republican voters.
And I did allude in the opening to packing and cracking. You just talked about packing, where you dilute influence by putting everybody in one district. The opposite, of course, is carving up that influence by putting a few, in your case, Democrats here, a few Democrats there.
But if you look at the way it was redistricted previously, where you had District 25, which had a community of interest, basically, which included most of Madison County and Anderson and the environs around that. And then you had District 26, which was Delaware County, which was Muncie and most of the communities around that. You would say that, that really did embody more of a community of interest in each case.
Now, so what's wrong? You're not arguing against the system so far. I've heard you say it's pretty good.
Well, but when they did my district, then they decided to turn it outside and instead combine Muncie and Anderson. And so you really did, carve up those previous communities of interest is the problem, I think, that happened there. And you also, instead of having Democrats competitive in two districts before, you actually only made Democrats competitive in one district.
Of course, I joked about this being a show of definitions. Communities of interest is also in the eye of the beholder. Some could say that, well, you have two traditional manufacturing communities in Muncie and Anderson that are very similar, and therefore they deserve to have their voice, I guess, again, in the eye of the beholder.
Yeah.
Julia Vaughn, you've been studying maps probably since you were in kindergarten, so that takes us back at least to the last decennial census. And I think you would say the system is broken and needs to be fixed.
Well, the problem here in Indiana and in too many states is that the redistricting process allows politicians to choose their voters rather than allowing voters to choose their politicians through elections. Too many districts in our state, both at the congressional and state legislative level, have been made safe districts. They're not competitive. We already know pretty well months before the general election who's going to win that district because the numbers The map drawer had more influence than the voters will have on election day. And so that's one of the real reasons we have such low voter turnout here in Indiana. Too many voters live in districts where there are no choices in the November election. In too many districts, the real competition is in the primary. That's why I think we have seen the Republican Party in Indiana really drift steadily this decade to the hard right. Because again, when you have a competitive, when you have a district that was drawn to favor one party heavily over the other, then the only competition you have is in the primary. And in our state, Republicans are primaried from the right. So I think the biggest problem is we have a legislature and a congressional delegation that is far more conservative than Hoosiers generally, and they're not representative of voters. That's the problem.
You've articulated the goal that many map drawers are willing, in many cases, to concede. I mean, I've heard back in 1990 and in 2000, people who were drawing the maps kind of took great pride in their ability to
draw districts.
But does it matter, Jay Yeager, that they don't always, their goals are not met? Again, let's refer to 90, when Republicans drew the maps, and yet by the end of the decade, look, guess who was in charge? Democrats. And then Democrats drew the maps the next time the decennial census produced results. And guess what? By the end of that decade, they failed in their mission. So, I mean, can we get so bent out of shape if people want to keep it, make safe districts, but it doesn't really work that way?
It is more of a science now than it's ever been, but for a long time it's been an art. And like every art, it doesn't work perfectly. We talked about 1981, 1991. I don't know personally how hard they were trying in 1991 to do the gerrymander, but if they tried, they didn't succeed. Obviously,
You're right. I misspoke. I said 90 initial. You're right. Yeah. 80, which produced the Democratic, the stereo speakers, so to speak, by the end of the decade, and then.
In 81, they did a gerrymander. It lasted for three elections. And by the standards of that day, that was probably worth the effort for those folks who did that gerrymander. That's three elections where they had unfair results. They had the polarization result as well that Julia talked about. And then they got to the end of that decade, and they got to do a redistricting again. So that wasn't really a terribly bad result, but it wasn't on the list of all-time worst gerrymanders. What has changed is the access of both the gerrymanderers and folks outside looking at in on this, the access to data, granular data at the precinct level about how people vote, how precincts vote. And folks can put that together with particular specialized computer software now and do so much better a job. So that when by the time we get to 2000, the gerrymander that was put in place it wasn't completely developed, but it was effective, and it was effective enough that in 2011, the National Republican Party took a look at Indiana, the Indiana House map, and they looked at all over the country, and they saw they had an opportunity with improving data possibilities or data capabilities. They could, if they could get control of some state legislatures and control the drawing of the maps in 2011, that they could control then congressional districts that would cost them, by their own calculation, probably 10 times as much to try to elect down the road. So it's gotten, the stakes have gotten higher, and the amplitude or the degree of the gerrymanders have gotten worse.
Well, and the proof is in the pudding, because we've had no competition in our congressional elections for the past decade. So 2011, they did it well.
In terms of state legislature races, and there are there's, I guess, if you want to say blame, again, this suggests that, as you would call it, blame, because you don't like the system. But there are also unopposed Democrats who are advantaged by the system.
So it's
not,
well,
let's not suggest it's just Republicans who are getting a cakewalk to in the general election.
All voters are getting cheated.
But you can look at those districts in the Democrat column, if you will. And when you see, urban districts where it's at 70% plus Democrats, you have to think, well, this was done by virtue of the data that's available and how easy it is to draw those lines now on a computer and to come up with districts like that, which are not competitive in that regards, but you're packing, too.
You've I was going to say, that's chalking up for Democrats, packing, I guess, as opposed
you've
to...
You've packed all those Democrats on into those few districts.
Well, if okay, so let's stipulate you all find fault with the current system. What do you want to see happen? And you can tell me what you want to see happen, and then I will point out, because it's my role to introduce some reality, that ain't going to happen. Go ahead and say what you want.
Well, we've worked for years to pass reform through the legislature, and you're right, it didn't happen because it's extremely difficult
and
to get the folks.
Define reform as you, what's your vision of reform?
Well, we need a multipartisan and diverse group of voters who have no direct interest in the outcome of redistricting to be in charge of it, to hold public hearings, to take public testimony, to have a discussion about what criteria should be prioritized.
Does such a creature exist, though? Is somebody that has no stake? Is that somebody who's so divorced from the process and so detached from
absolutely
the state's fortunes?
A growing number
of states.
It's like
a juror that knows nothing about anything. Do you really want that person, I guess?
Absolutely.
You do
we
want
do.
That. Okay.
We want people who are engaged in their communities because we want maps that are drawn for the good of communities across our state.
But you still have to attach R or D, if you want equal representation. We all know that they're not created
from
the same mold.
But not everybody in Indiana is a Republican or a Democrat. Yeah. So what we have put together is the Indiana Citizens Redistricting Commission.
This is a grassroots group that you're having your own hearings in nine congressional districts.
Yes, that will show the public and the legislature how this should be done. We've made up a group of Republicans, Democrats, people who are neither
three
Republican.
Of each, right?
Three
from each group. And you even brag it's from age 18 to 86.
19 to 86, yes. Okay. Our 86-year-old is Lee Morris, one of our Republican members, the former mayor of LaPorte, Indiana.
You do know the best voters are 87 and up, so you're probably...
Well, Mr. Morris has been involved in his community for decades, and so he knows Northwest Indiana. He's the perfect kind of person to be put in charge of this process. We're holding public hearings. We're taking public testimony. We're talking to voters about what criteria should be prioritized. Should we prioritize compactness, which is what Republicans did in 2011, or should we prioritize competitiveness? Do you want districts where your candidate has a pretty good chance of winning? So far, voters are telling us they think
are competition. That introduces another kind of gerrymandering, which, again, it could be a positive or negative, depending on one's point of view. But I know the website 538, which is a very well-respected political site nationally, did an exercise where they looked at some of these things with algorithms, and let's do one with compactness, let's do one with competitiveness. And you can get competitive districts, a computer can spit that out, but they look even more surreal than the most bizarre ink blots you've ever seen on a...
Right, but you can't always judge a gerrymander by its shape. Sometimes there are good reasons to have weird-shaped districts, but again, it's what do voters want out of their districts. Voters in Indiana want their votes to count, and the only way they're going to get that is if we draw districts more with an eye towards competition. Now, you cannot draw nine competitive congressional seats, 100 competitive House seats, and 50 competitive Senate seats, but we certainly can draw more competitive districts than exist now.
You could probably do it, but it would violate the state's statute, which requires they're contiguous lines, right? You can't have like a little dot here and a dot there.
And we're not proposing
that.
But again, there is more competition in this state than is represented by the current maps. That is absolutely true.
Jay Yeager, is that the model? I mean, this notion of we got three of this party, three of that party, three of no party. Is that a model that would work?
Absolutely. I agree. You're not looking for people who are ignorant or uninformed. You're looking for balance.
Right.
And the folks drawing the lines now are not balanced as an artifact of the last gerrymander. If you have a balanced group drawing a map, either commissions or even a state government that's divided between the parties, the data shows over a period of time you get fair maps when the process is balanced. When the process is one-sided, when you have one-party control, that's when you get these big gerrymanders.
Why not? If I'm hearing you say that the computers and technology has reached a point where, well, we all know this from our direct marketing, how we're, one time you look for an inflatable kayak, and I'm now never going to dodge that bullet for the rest of my life on advertising. So this takes that to another level in the political arena. So if technology is so great, and we don't like human influence, we want fairness, why not just do what some people, this is not a joke, some people have suggested use algorithms and just tell the computer you want compactness, you want, you know, equal numbers in the districts, and just live with where the chips, you know, where they fall. Well, what's wrong with that?
Well, I guess it'd be fine in an ideal world, but as long as Jay and Julia have mentioned here, the system's controlled by not all politicians, but the politicians in the majority party, which, you know, now we have supermajorities.
You're saying somebody has to program the computer.
That's right, and they're going to program it into what is the political advantage. And it's so easy to do because of the election data that's available. You can, and as has been suggested here, the sophistication of the programs where they can just simply, you know, they can move one half or one quarter or one eighth of a census block one way or the other and see what the advantage is. And I've seen it done. You can go in and see how it's done on the computer, and they can do it, and you know, they can come up with seven different scenarios in 10 minutes if you want it, or less. So the sophistication, but the problem is that the number one goal is political advantage of one party, and it's all drawn with that in mind. Everything else is just, you know, rationalization for why this district works.
If your party controlled the chamber 39 to 11 rather than you were on the downside, would you be as enthusiastic? I mean, honestly.
No, would I be as enthusiastic?
Yeah, about reform.
Look, you can look at history. When the Democrats had control in the House, they drew those, as you mentioned, they drew those districts for
advantage. Yeah, but that's before they had Jay's computer down there.
That's right, exactly. But they tried to do that way.
They tried.
And that's why, you know, we the Democrats in the Senate have had bills, we have one this year, to create the commission, some commission, maybe not exactly the details that Julia is talking about, but take it out of the hands of the politicians initially so that, you know, good government type of goals are what's used to try to draw these districts, and at least put some heat on the politicians to look at those maps and allow public input. I'm worried this year there's virtually going to be no public input because of the way things are going to shake out.
There might be more because it will be done in a special session. Let me back up because I promised to introduce reality. You want all to see a commission. There were bills introduced, and that ain't going to happen. The reality is not going to happen politically. So that, I guess you're trying to demonstrate with your grassroots commission how this could work. You'll put a report together. You'll submit it to lawmakers. But are you more optimistic? I've seen you suggest that because typically this is done during the regular session, but because of COVID and census challenges that census takers have had at the federal level, state map drawers aren't going to get the maps until, September?
September.
So there will be a special session. You said last time in 2011 there were 17 days between the introduction of the maps, the unveiling, and they were signed. So is this actually a good thing?
More problematic. The intervening months are a great thing. We're going to be spending this time doing organizing, educating citizens about how important this process is. But I fear, like Senator Lannon, I mean, they could come in and get out real quickly. So once the regular session is over, we're going to start negotiating with the leadership about
Before the date, scheduled date.
We need public testimony before so they can understand what the public wants to see, and then we need adequate time after their maps are released.
And this would be in addition to the testimony
you're
already
So that we'll be able to do the
analysis.
I mean, that's the real help that computers. We can now analyze the maps that are being proposed to predict what the electoral outcomes, to analyze how communities will be divided. So it all depends on how the legislature wants to operate this special session. The other part of our demonstration project this year is we've got the commission, but we also have a public mapping website. We're going to be inviting all citizens across the state to try their hand at drawing districts. It's not rocket science. We've got some very easy-to-use software, and, you know, we need to outsource this across our state, get lots of good ideas on the table, because the Republican supermajority doesn't have all the good ideas.
Democracy is a participation sport.
It is.
You know, Jay Yeager, we've heard now that the political realities are such that Indiana probably is not, even if there were a sea change in the party makeup now and there were Democratic supermajorities, yeah, there's some idealism still there, but hey, if they're going to draw the maps, they're probably, and they're armed with these great computers and the technology you talk about, there may be a diminished enthusiasm. So is the answer for reform advocates the courts? I mean, again, that I mentioned you're involved in several. I mean, ultimately, those folks who don't like the current system, which is where lawmakers draw their own maps, are the courts the answer?
So the court solution is unfortunately limited. There was a movement in several states, the most gerrymandered states, Michigan, Wisconsin, Ohio, two or three other states.
And you know a little bit about this. You were involved in it.
I had the Michigan case with a group of other lawyers and collaborated in the other cases. We were up in the Supreme Court a couple times, went up to the Supreme Court on standing, came back down, then went up. And ultimately, although all the district courts, these are three-judge panels, all different kinds of judges from all different kinds of backgrounds, overwhelmingly, the district courts found on this evidence that we've been talking about, this data, these quantitative analyses of the metrics about how bad the maps are, and the other information about the intent to gerrymander, these courts found overwhelming evidence that these were unconstitutional gerrymanders, that they were grave violations of constitutional rights. It got up to the Supreme Court, 5-4 vote, over a very vigorous, and I recommend this dissent, Justice Kagan dissent, which was excellent. The decision was, not saying it's not a problem, but it's not our problem. So the federal court door is probably closed now. Now, Justice Roberts did say, go to state court, because state constitutions have other language that the federal constitution doesn't have, and our constitution has that language. So that door is open. But other than that, I think, what Common Cause and what Julia's been doing and the coalition has been doing is leading the charge that has to be led now. And there are other people coming to reinforce. There are other organizations. Women for Change in Indiana is working on it. IndianaCitizen.org is working on it. I know other organizations are working on it. It's going to be well-resourced. So we're going to have a commission. We're going to have maps. We're going to have data. We're going to have national experts who are going to come and analyze the existing maps, the new maps, the maps that are going to be proposed. And we're going to have this time frame that you talked about. So we're not going to have to compete with all the other issues in the legislature. So there's a reason to be a little bit hopeful, if not optimistic.
And by the next time around, there will be, because there are states, as has been noted, that do have commissions. And again, there are kind of all different models about how they are put together. But California has one that seems to have.
Right.
A lot of people will be watching. There will be proof of performance or proof of concept, I guess. Do you think the courts ultimately are – and the courts, we should say, generally the courts don't like to weigh in on election stuff. That's, generally speaking, 9 times out of 10. And when they do weigh in, it tends to be over racial gerrymandering as opposed to, with the exception that Jay mentioned.
Right.
I mean, is your faith in the courts here, or are you just going to keep hammering away with that bill that's introduced?
It's frustrating because there is less of an opportunity in the courts. I have to look to the courts. I don't have much faith that you're going to see the General Assembly do something about this. They've had the opportunity many times, and they've turned it down.
All right. I have about another 400 questions to ask, but unfortunately, we're out of time. Fascinating topic. And your expertise that you bring to the table for this discussion is much appreciated. We will watch and see how this turns out this session. And if you don't like it this time, 10 years, we'll see. We'll reconvene. Again, my guests have been Senator Tim Lannan of Anderson, Julia Vaughn of Common Cause Indiana, and Indianapolis attorney Jay Yeager. If you live in the country, would you rather hear the trains a-coming, or would you rather keep on trucking? We're hauling a heavy load on the next Indiana Lawmakers. And time now for our weekly conversation with Indiana Lawmakers analyst Ed Feigenbaum, publisher of the newsletter Indiana Legislative Insight, part of Hannon News Service. Ed, what's your take on our current system for redistricting? You've been through a few of these, the decennial process. It's an interesting time every 10 years.
Where do I go from there? There's really no perfect way to run a redistricting system, and I think that the panelists all agreed on that. And everybody's got their own definition of what gerrymandering is and what they're looking to get out of it. But you also have to deal with reality. And in Indiana, the reality is that the Democratic vote is starting to center in the major cities, And the Republicans are seeing a lot of their votes in the suburbs and in declining rural areas. So you're going to see, you know, Democrats in the city and districts focused on Democrats in the city. And you're going to see some of the rural districts become bigger and bigger and have fewer and fewer representatives as the rural areas decline in population. And we've also seen, you know, and something the panel really didn't talk about, is that judicial lines can work when they're drawn by judges. You know, we saw Ted Boehm draw some district lines when he was on the Indiana Supreme Court for the Indianapolis City Council, and he did that in just a few weeks, and just a few weeks before the city council elections, and did that without regard to the parties. I think that both sides would agree that that worked out pretty well.
Don't you think,
though,
that
a little bit better for Democrats? But
well, most judges, though, seem to, you know, I know it when I see it sort of thing. They're not where they don't want to wade into the weeds and say, you know, this census tract, this street, that creek, do they? I mean, that's not what they want to wade into.
Oh, absolutely not. But it can be done. And the Indiana Supreme Court did it and did it very, very well, you know, and, you know, about a decade or so ago. And you also have to realize that politics and times change. And you mentioned this when you talked about the 1981 redistricting, which the U.S. Court of Appeals for the Seventh Circuit, I think it was, said was probably the most partisan redistricting plan in the country. And then, gee, you know, just a couple of election cycles later in 1988, the Democrats came to parity in the House and took over in 1990. And then when they drew the district lines, as you pointed out, in 1991, they lost the 1992 elections. So things do change. And it's just going to be very interesting, very different this year, because it's going to be the first time that we will not have done redistricting within a regular legislative session or through a redistricting commission that's been constituted because we couldn't get it done. And it wasn't our fault. It's the Fed's fault this time.
That will be interesting to see if it provides fewer opportunities for public input, as Tim Lannon suggested, or maybe, just maybe, gives more opportunity for public input, as Julia Vaughn had suggested. Last question. We're down to 30 seconds or less. When our great-great-great-grandkids get together to have this discussion over beers, will they still be complaining about the current system, or will they be complaining about that commission which has been in place for 100 years that nobody likes? I mean, what's the future hold?
I think they'll be doing it via virtual reality. It's going to be even easier than Julia Vaughn says that it's going to be. And I think that you'll probably see a lot less politics involved in that decades down the line.
We'll check back in several hundred years, see if you're right. Ed, thanks as always for your insight. Much appreciated. For more information, episode streams, and other extra content, visit us on the web at wfyi.org/lawmakers. Well, that concludes another edition of Indiana Lawmakers. I'm John Schwanis. I thank you for joining us. Until next week, take care.